All views expressed by the host or guests are solely their own opinions. Nothing stated in this podcast should be considered a specific endorsement to make any particular investment or follow any specific strategy. The content is intended purely as an expression of personal opinion and is provided for informational purposes only.
We already have our phones, which have storage. We have our ISPs that we are paying for. If we just connect it to each other, we don't need to pay for any extra hosting, and it would scale up with demand. Is it somehow like politicians power tripping, or what are the incentives behind that? Is it like the system fighting back the establishment? Dunbar's number is the approximation of the amount of people that we can conceptualize in our social circle.
Be honest, was it the music or the hair that pulled you in?
The United States is sending rockets to the space that return to the dock at millimeter precision, and European Union does all these regulations, and it's becoming like a nursing home for a non-innovation.
Marty, great to have you here. Welcome to All in Bitcoin.
Thank you.
Before we get into Bitcoin and more, I would love to warm up with my 21 takes on Marty. As a kid and growing up, was it all tech on your radar?
I was into computers from a very early age. I think I was like 2 or 3 when I started playing computer games with my dad. Video games were the thing, DOS games for me personally. I guess I did my first website when I was 7 or something and started using the internet because my dad worked at the university, and so he got the access and he worked in IT.
I was going to ask what pulled you into tech.
Yeah.
It would be your dad.
I guess it's in the family, but always had a fascination for that.
You are a huge fan of Children of Bodom. Be honest, was it the music or the hair that pulled you in? Because I did some research and...
also the hair. I had a long hair as a teenager. I started growing my hair when I started learning electric guitar as a teenager.
Did they inspire you to play the guitar?
Yes, that's Alexi, the lead guitarist, is what made me start playing guitar.
I also know you play the drums. How come?
It just comes with the band stuff, because everyone plays guitar, so oftentimes the guitarists need to learn something else just to play.
So you were in a band?
Yeah, we had a band in junior high school and high school. And later, I just wanted to learn drums, so I played drums, practiced for 1 year, 10 years ago.
The name of the band?
We went by different names. We had in junior high the metal band called Stone Museum. Stone was our inspiration, a Finnish band, metal band. Then later on, actually we played some Johnny Cash, among other stuff, in high school, like country and folk stuff. So we were Country Bob and Truckers.
Let's get some recommendations. A book that impacted you?
Of recent books, Edward Snowden's Permanent Record was pretty interesting. And the part about the old-time internet really resonated with me. Even though I'm a bit younger than him, I never used like bulletin board systems or Amiga or Commodore that the older generation is familiar with. But I still felt connection to the internet before smartphones and Facebook. Like when we used IRC and forums and all that stuff, it was so much better and went by nicknames instead of real names.
And what about an album or a song?
Children of Bodom, Hate Crew, Death Roll is their best album. There's a crazy Finnish like polka black metal band called Fintroll. They sing in Swedish. That's pretty interesting. Well, Scandinavian Music Group is one of my favorites from Finland. They play like folk and pop. They're really talented musicians.
The best advice you ever given?
This is from Jordan Peterson, but aim for the highest conceivable good.
Fiat Jaff.
Seems like a cool guy. We need all kinds of personalities. Also the very disagreeable, contrarian personalities, and maybe he's one of those guys.
PS5 or Series X?
never played Xbox. I have PS4 at home, but I don't use it too much.
What makes you smile?
My family, my daughter.
If you could trade lives with anyone for a day, who would be at the very bottom of your list?
People who have completely different values, like people who don't speak the truth and who are not kind to others.
Sports?
Sports, I don't know. I'm not a team sports guy at all. I never watched football or ice hockey or anything. But I do individual sports like climbing and running and archery.
Archery?
Yeah, that's something new. Climbing, mostly bouldering indoors, I've done for maybe like 10 years. I used to go to the gym, but bouldering is way more fun to me.
Your drink of choice?
For now, it's coffee. I drink a lot of coffee, but I guess gin tonics are nice. Beer works.
Your non-negotiables?
Honesty.
What drives you absolutely crazy?
I guess like pretentiousness, dishonesty, hypocrisy, disregard for other people's will. I'm a libertarian. I believe in individual sovereignty.
A topic you can't stop talking about?
I'm pretty good at not talking. I'm Finnish and I'm a quiet guy even for a Finn. But I guess like evolutionary psychology is pretty interesting to me. Libertarianism and anarcho-capitalism, but I don't like speaking about it to people who don't want to hear. So,
rules or rulers?
Rules, of course.
Mount Gox?
Tragedy. Cautionary tale. I hope we have learned from it.
Sewet?
I'm just a web developer. I don't know about the Bitcoin's intricacies these days.
Your latest obsession?
Noster.
Now, give us your definition of libertarianism.
The notion that every individual owns their life and their body and they can do whatever. Peaceful individuals are allowed to do whatever they want with their life and property.
How does it shape your character and the way you see the world?
We have different like moral foundations and different, we just feel differently what is important to us and what is not. And it's a bit lonely sometimes. Most people are not libertarians. Maybe like 5% of people identify as libertarians. But it's okay. And it's all, I always like finding common ground with people who have different opinions. And I think libertarianism has more to offer to most people than they realize.
In your view, what are the limitations of political approaches compared to grassroots or tech-driven alternatives for gaining more freedom?
Yeah, that's a good question. That's why I took the technology route with Bitcoin in the first place, because changing things through politics is usually, it is slow, might be impossible even, because the incentives might be totally wrong. Like there are these special interest groups that have very big incentives to lobby and get like their part of the tax revenue lobby to themselves, whereas the average taxpayer doesn't have the time and energy to resist. So the incentives can be pretty wrong. So it's slow and sometimes impossible to change things through politics. I don't think it would be politically possible to abolish the Federal Reserve, for instance. I think we need something like Bitcoin for that.
What made you realize that a decentralized monetary system should be the foundation for building a strong free society?
Everything in our life depends and runs on money. So I figured money would be the most impactful thing you could change. Because if you have control over the monetary system, you basically control everyone's time and energy. If you have the printing press, you can just debase their time and energy, and it messes up so many things in the culture. I agree with the fiat standard notion that culture kind of flows downstream from the monetary system. And also when you control the banking system, you can censor, you can confiscate people's money, you can monitor everything. So there's no privacy, and I wish Bitcoin could fix all this. and it seems to be going that way.
Can you explain what a decentralized monetary system really means?
No one has control over the money printer, and no one can prevent you from transacting. And preferably, there would also be privacy. It's not that great on layer one Bitcoin. Lightning is fairly okay for privacy as far as I know. I think layer one improvements might be possible on Bitcoin as well. If any solutions with not too many trade-offs are invented, I think they can be integrated into Bitcoin, no problem.
I like to quote you. I guess I just don't believe people should have the right to vote on other people's lives. I think the power of decentralization is that it puts control back in the hands of individuals. Has control ever really been in the hands of individuals?
Yeah, I guess in the hunter-gatherer times you had pretty much autonomic, well, dependent on your tribe, of course, and you could always leave if you like. Nowadays people say you can always move to Somalia or whatever, but there's no real option to opt out of the system. I guess it's true that since the beginning of agriculture, when we became stationary, we always had like rulers taxing us because it was easy to tax the farmers, unlike the hunter-gatherers. There's a theory that the Garden of Eden was the hunter-gatherer times, and then we fell out of grace when we became farmers.
Why is decentralization crucial, not just for Bitcoin, but for society at large?
So I believe that freedom not only feels good, at least to us libertarians, but it also is the best way to organize societies. Like United States is not a free economy anymore, but it used to be very, very, very free, like 100, 150 years ago, and it grew up to be the largest economy in the world.
Because it was decentralized?
Because it was free, there was not too much government involvement, very low tax rate, not too much regulation. Of course, geography as well, like the United States, all the transportation infra and the natural resources, but freedom just works. It's good for us. If you want to be healthy and happy, and then you should have economic freedom as well.
If decentralization is at the heart of it, what other crucial ingredients do you think are essential for building an ideal society, apart from freedom?
Yeah, it might be that many of the right things flow from having a good monetary system. I'm an appreciator of Western values in general. And maybe some stuff like that we take for granted, like innocent until proven guilty, rule of law, honesty, kindness to strangers, and that kind of stuff that doesn't exist in all cultures.
You'll probably agree when I say that money is one of the most misunderstood concepts in the world. How did you figure it out so early on?
I grew up on the internet, pretty much. I'm a bit of a loner, I guess. So I was a computer science student, 20 years old, when I found Bitcoin. I had lived on my own for a couple of years, had a lot of time to think about the world, and I was reading libertarian blogs and maybe like Mises.org. I never really read the literature, but more of the online discourse.
All right. Paint the picture for me. Where were you when you first discovered Bitcoin?
2009, April, I think. I looked into alternative monetary systems and found all these non-solutions that were centralized. Then I Googled for peer-to-peer currency and found Bitcoin.
You Googled for peer-to-peer currency?
Yeah.
You were the second ever developer to work directly with Satoshi on Bitcoin. How would you describe him in three adjectives? Was he funny?
No, he wasn't funny. He used the word retarded in one of those emails, which many people found funny, myself included. He was like modest and super intelligent, productive.
What is your definition of Bitcoin?
What did Satoshi call it? Peer-to-peer cryptocurrency. That's the word.
Would you say Bitcoin is fully decentralized?
On the protocol level, I guess pretty much, but people use custodial wallets. I guess that's like okay for Lightning wallets for fairly small amounts. Of course, self-custody is important for larger amounts.
Mining in mempools?
It's decentralized enough as far as I'm concerned. I don't see too much threat from the level of centralization in some places.
So here we go, regulations, everyone's favorite topic. What's your take on the purpose of regulations? Can you think of a situation where they might actually benefit society?
I don't know, like storage of customer funds, but even then regulation can give like the false impression of security, like we are regulatory compliant, and still they might get hacked. And maybe I don't have a strong opinion. Maybe it's good that fraud has consequences, like if you steal money, you go to jail, or if the victims can be compensated in some reasonable way.
What are your thoughts on MiCA regulations in Europe, if you have any?
Yeah, it seems like United States is sending like rockets to the space that return to the dock at millimeter precision, and European Union does all these regulations, and it's becoming like a nursing home for a non-innovation, too strict and too homogeneous. So there's no room for competition, like regulatory competition, which would be vital for success. I don't know. It seems like there's some sort of a low-intensity war going on in Europe to some extent, like Denmark and whatever countries, maybe Italy, imposing these insane tax rates, like 42% on crypto and Bitcoin. I'm not quite sure where it comes from. Is it somehow like politicians power tripping, or what are the incentives behind that? Is it like the system fighting back the establishment? Something's definitely going on, and I don't like the direction too much. Well, Finland is fairly okay in that regard still.
How is it in Finland?
So like Norway and Sweden have been pretty strict and difficult on crypto stuff, but in Finland there's all these mining initiatives going on. People realize it can be actually beneficial for the power grid and for renewables, and you can use all the heat for district heating, or you can heat greenhouses or swimming pools or whatever. So there's no really, not too much waste in there, and it's just beneficial in many ways. So I hope we can grow Bitcoin on the grassroots level in many places, so that the pro-Bitcoin culture is stronger than the anti-Bitcoin currents.
If regulations get too tough on Bitcoin, would you be willing to consider moving to a Bitcoin-friendlier place?
Yeah, probably yes. Personally, it's not easy for me to leave because I have family and friends in Finland. I like Finland in many ways, but I could see myself living in Lugano or somewhere, Portugal, in 10 years. I don't know.
Is Bitcoin a threat or the solution for government sovereign debt?
Solution for whom? I guess governments could benefit from it if they are early adopters, like El Salvador. I don't know if Bhutan, I guess, has Bitcoin mining, and some smaller governments especially might have Bitcoin.
The early adopters.
They might really benefit from it. I guess Donald Trump's Bitcoin will pay off our national debt, but it's just Trump's speech.
Do you think people could eventually be banned or blacklisted from the financial system simply for using or having Bitcoin?
Yeah, I guess that could happen if things get really bad. I just hope we can make Bitcoin strong enough before they become that powerful.
Do you see a split between KYC and non-KYC Bitcoin, and what would that imply?
Yeah, I guess that's a worrying possibility that might happen, like blacklisted Bitcoins that you are not allowed to put to official exchanges and people not accepting it. I don't really know how that is going to play out.
Yeah. You found Bitcoin just a few months after its creation, and about 10 years later, you were very early with Nostra too. How do you cut through the noise and find the pure signal?
I guess focus on the fundamentals and disregard all the what's popular stuff. like Blue Sky is currently popular in some circles. I guess they have like millions of users, but it's just another centralized platform built in the appearance of decentralization. Bitcoin and Nostr have the fundamentals right. That's why I believe they are going to win in the end.
You've mentioned Bitcoin is just the beginning for building decentralized infrastructure. I love your quote, Bitcoin is freedom of money and Nostr is freedom of everything else. Could you elaborate on that?
Technically, Bitcoin is like this consensus system where accounts are just key pairs. You can create a Bitcoin wallet without asking anyone's permission. You can sign a transaction without asking anyone's permission, and the network will independently validate it with proof of work, maintain the consensus around the world. Nostr is a bit similar in the key pair and signature part, but we don't need the consensus part on Nostr. So we can use it for all kind of data, and we can put as much stuff into signed Nostr events as we want without worrying about transaction costs and having to replicate it over all over the world. You can basically do pretty much everything else on Nostr. We can get rid of all these centralized platforms, whether it's social media or commerce like marketplaces, Airbnb, whatever. We can take out the middleman. And also, Nostr is a social app protocol. You can use it as part of games or whatever you like.
For those that don't know, could you explain Nostr in simple terms?
So it stands for notes and other stuff transmitted over relays. Well, maybe that doesn't explain it
too
well.
No, in simple terms. Try again.
Yeah. How would you explain it in layman terms? That's a good question. It's a social app protocol. Well, protocol is not normie language, I guess. But it's a way of doing self-sovereign identities and communications.
What drove its creation?
I don't know what drove Fiat Jaff to create Nostr, but when I worked on similar stuff earlier, I started from like the identity and the reputation part back in over 10 years ago. I was thinking it could be like a way to scale up the Dunbar's number. Dunbar's number is the approximation of the amount of people that we can conceptualize in our head, in our tribe and our social circle, usually estimated to be like 200 or something. Like, how many people can you personally know? And that maybe used to be the amount of people in our hunter-gatherer tribes. And then there's village societies, which are a bit larger, but still there's this culture of trust in villages. So you need to treat everyone well. And I was hoping with digital technology, we could scale up the Dunbar's number to a global village society where people have the right incentives to be good to each other. So that's where I started, but then I pivoted to social media because it's like, as a concept, it's more fundamental. You need it first before starting a web of trust. It's also important in other ways, like you don't want Elon Musk to be able to ban the president of United States or decide what you're going to see on your feed and what's going to be hidden. Well, Musk seems like a freedom of speech person, but he's just a guy and there will be someone else after him, and things can go wrong in many ways in centralized organizations.
Let's talk about clients and relays. What are they and why do they matter?
Clients are the software that you use for Nostr. So you have it's like a Bitcoin wallet. You can use whatever wallet software you want to. And they will talk to each other through this network of voluntary run relays on Nostr.
What would be a good analogy for a relay?
It's something that users wouldn't normally deal with. Like when you type in an address to the browser, you're connecting to a server. So relay is one kind of a server.
So if one relay goes down or a client goes down,
you can always go somewhere else.
How easy is it for a normie to enjoy Nostr?
I've tried to hide all the alien concepts in Iris, the client that I develop. Like, I don't show public keys anywhere. If there's no profile name for some user, then I display like an animal adjective name in its place and try to be normie friendly and not display weird nerdy stuff.
And if you had to explain a private key or a public key, how would you explain it?
Password is the closest to private key. It's a familiar concept for people, and for public key, that's harder to explain, I guess, but that's like your account ID.
Do you think there is any chance that in 5 to 10 years, we won't be using cryptographic keys to prove our identity in everyday life?
I mean, with deep fake stuff, it becomes ever more important to verify the source of the content, because you cannot rely on the form. If you see a picture or even hear a voice these days, you don't know if it's actually your daughter you're talking to. I guess we need cryptographic proof, like a social graph, web of trust style, rather than x.com reassuring this is actually the person who made the content.
Can you talk about the problem with private chats in Nostr DMs and the solution you came up with?
Oh yeah, so Nostr is censorship resistance technology. Privacy was not the design goal with Nostr, and direct messages were like quickly glued on solution. So on Nostr currently, direct message content is encrypted, but the sender and recipient and timestamp are visible. So you can check out someone's chat history and you can see every message they sent and when they sent and whom, but you just don't see the content. So I have recently done an improvement on this. I want to do like signal style double ratchet algorithm. So you would use session keys that are only on your device and you periodically rotate, create a new key. So that provides so-called forward and backward secrecy. So even if your main Nostr private key is compromised, your past and future chats will be safe. And also the metadata will be hidden. I have actually already done the first part of the double ratchet. I just need the second part, which provides even more reassurance if you use disappearing messages or if you delete your chat history, then it's gone for good with the second ratchet added. Still working on it.
Because right now I think you cannot delete the DMs.
Yeah, you still cannot delete them on the relays, but they become unencryptable.
Talk about the challenges you see in scaling Nostr for media and how could peer-to-peer solutions help?
So Nostr is currently for text content only, and typically media files, images and videos and audio are linked with normal URLs, like hosted on some server somewhere. There are some content addressing solutions to this. I think they are already used for images to some extent. But I think we should have something for larger files. Something like decentralized YouTube would really be a killer. Because as a content creator, there's the tragedy that when your content becomes more popular, your hosting bill grows, especially when it comes to video. Typically, the solution would be ad funding, but it comes with its own problems, like the censorship on ad-funded platforms, and maybe clickbaiting and all this stuff we don't want. So I hope peer-to-peer file sharing could be a solution to that. We already have our phones, which have storage. We have our ISPs that we are paying for. If we just connect it to each other, we don't need to pay for any extra hosting, and it would scale with demand. I believe could fix a lot of those problems, including censorship.
And how do you keep Iris users free from spam?
I use the social graph as a web of trust. So it maintains a view of your social graph, like the people you follow, the people they follow, and you can optionally extend it even further to third degree or fourth. I need to add block list sharing as well. Sometimes people follow accounts that turn out to be spammers later, or maybe they have a different conception of what is spam and what is not. Like people might follow bots that post every hour or something. So Iris uses that to filter content by default, and it really works. There used to be this spam epidemic. Someone was purposefully making these reply bots that would reply to every post. And it really ruined the user experience on many clients. But the social graph handles it pretty well.
You are a fan of lightning-based donation models. In simple terms, how do these models align the interest of the developer with the users?
Yeah, so I think that's a really great model in terms of incentives, like applications that deal with money. They can take a cut of each transaction, even if it's a voluntary donation, even if it's open source, even if it's donation that is enabled by default. That really seemed to work for Wasabi Wallet. They were not Lightning, but still they had the same business model and really seemed to work. I think it could work for Nostr clients as well if we are able to increase the volume. So when people zap or tip for Nostr posts, the client developers would receive a donation of each zap. And that really aligns the incentives with the developers and users, unlike some other model like advertising.
How do you see Bitcoin and Nostr working together to build a freer and more decentralized future?
Yeah, so Bitcoin is for money and Nostr is for everything else, right? They go hand in hand. All the Nostr clients basically have some sort of Lightning support, Zaps at least. And it's also a convenient directory for finding someone's Lightning address. Like we go to a restaurant and then someone pays the bill and we just look up the Lightning address on Nostr and pay them back.
At Nostrasia, you mentioned...
Nostr is really something I'm bullish on. Nostr and Bitcoin together can be something truly remarkable. The freedom alternative to the dystopia of central bank digital currencies and WeChat-style everything apps. Nostr community, I'm just really loving the energy here. Feels like the early days of Bitcoin, but even more intense, faster development, and we have more users already. We are onto something great, and Nostr is the future. So, thank you. Amen.
Anything you would like to add?
We have the fundamentals right, and I think we're eventually going to win, even if it might take some time. I hope it doesn't take 15 years for Nostr. I think it's probably going to be faster now that we already have the Bitcoin community behind us.
Before we wrap up, where can people follow you and your work?
You can go to iris.to, that's iris.to/Sirius, S-R-I-U-S. If you're a boomer, you can follow me on x.com. First name, last name, Martti Molmi.
Martti, I've learned a lot. It's been a pleasure. Thanks for joining us. Can't wait to have you on the pod next time.
Thank you. It was good chatting with you.